Hey there, it's JVL. On The Secret Show with Sarah Longwell today, we talked all about the Supreme Court oral arguments about Trump's immunity claim. It's a big show. Here we go.
You know, the George thing was interesting. So I was on TV with David Frum this morning, and he had a pretty similar take to what George did. Which was, look, the guy who was taking Trump's position, right? The total immunity, that the judges are like, that's stupid. And like that nobody's going to take the idea of blanket immunity seriously, because you set up these preposterous hypothetical, not preposterous, you set up these hypotheticals that are like, okay, so Biden could, in his official capacity, order the military to kill his political rival Donald Trump because he is corrupt and that's an official act and therefore he'd be immune from that. And, you know, the lawyer's kind of like, well, it would depend on the specifics, but yeah, in your hypothetical, sure, you'd be able to do that, right? And so George's point, and I think David's point this morning, were sort of both like, there was no need for the lawyers to sit after that and like spend a long time on this, because that's, nobody's going to give blanket immunity. And then the part where they were questioning the state's attorney, right, which is what I think has people really freaked out, is it just like looked like they were taking very seriously the extent to which they spent time prodding the hypotheticals for a future president. Was kind of like, oh my God, like they're just not being laughed out of court. They are taking this seriously. They are trying to figure out all of the different ways that it could apply. George's point and David's was like, this is an intellectual exercise that comes from the need to, if you're going to rule on this, it's going to have implications forever. And you have to be like, George was saying this thing on the show about how hard cases make bad laws, because
that is a truism.
You know, you have to take these incredibly difficult cases and try to turn them into something that can apply to all other hypothetical cases in the future, right? So it sounds like what they will do, or this is what George thought they would do, and what David seemed to think they would do, is that like on the narrow question of whether, and this was Judge Luttig also, who's a friend, was saying, and I would say my reaction was the closest to his, where I listened to it and I was like, why are they entertaining this? Like, why aren't they just saying, well, this is the dumbest thing I've ever heard? But also, I don't listen to a lot of Supreme Court cases. I mean, by the time it's there, they're going to take it seriously. Like, they're going to consider all the angles. And the other thing George said is that this guy who was arguing for the state, Deneen, is that his name?
Not Patrick Deneen, but yeah. No. Because, I'll look it up while you talk.
Okay, thanks. That he is really, really well respected and really good. And so a lot of the what the Supreme Court justices were doing is like using him to kick the tires, right? Being like, okay, but how would you answer this? And how would you answer this? But to Luttig's point, and this is like the central question is, did the guy who did a coup, can he be immune from that? Like, can you do a coup and be immune? And Luttig's point, and I think this is how I felt listening to it, was just, why isn't anybody answering that question? It seems like the most germane question, seems like an obvious one, and feels like, you know, we should discuss it. Instead, there's a lot about like, could George Bush be prosecuted? Could Obama be prosecuted for the drones? It was like Trump was like a lawyer friend I have.
Michael Dreeben.
Dreeben. Thank you. A lawyer friend that I have was like, Trump's like a ghost at this trial. Like, it's just, it's weird because it is about him. He is the one testing our institutions and forcing us to consider things that we've never had to consider because he's a bad person and because he's done so much criminal activity. We now are like forced to debate these things. But like, I think that it's okay. But Trump was not at the center of it. Like, we weren't talking about Trump. And so I think everybody sort of came away with like, okay, this is preposterous. And the other thing that felt, I had the immediate thought when the Trump's lawyer was arguing, is like, the quality of shamelessness that has always pervaded Trump and his people. Like, you are going to stand up in front of the Supreme Court and be like, yeah, so if he did a coup, he gets to be immune from the coup. And Kagan is like, well, that sounds idiotic. And he's like, I'm just here to make the case.
But then Sam Alito's position was, but if you prosecute somebody for trying a coup, then aren't you incentivizing people to do more coups? It's just like, what the fuck are you talking about?
The Alito thing was the worst piece.
We're not prosecuting people who've done coups before, and now we got an attempted coup. He's like, wouldn't you get more coups if you tried to hold people accountable for them?
What he was saying was, if any president or every president thought that once they left office, they might get prosecuted for things they did while in office, wouldn't that encourage them to try to stay in office by refusing to leave office, trying to stop a coup,
you're actually causing more coups. Yeah. See, it's your fault, libs. Resistance, never Trump, TDS people.
Yeah, he's got MAGA brain rot, Alito. Like, he is that was the real low point. And I think it is the thing that made people go, oh my God, Kavanaugh, Alito, Gorsuch, like, they
Thomas,
all seem
for
like
sure.
Thomas, they all seem like they could go for this.
100%.
And not full immunity. I don't think
this was not full immunity.
Not full immunity, but that but here's the thing, like, and the private action versus public action, right? So there was much made of this. And one of the things that came through pretty loud and clear was the difference between public action and private action. Even Trump's attempted coup, much of that could be considered private action, not public
all
action.
Of it, I think.
So, like, here's the thing, though. There was this good Rolling Stone piece that is basically how I'm thinking about this, because I'm just now all I can do is aggregate what we hear smarter people who are lawyers say to us. But the Rolling Stone thing sounded right to me, which is that Trump's team is already celebrating what they consider to be a victory in having delayed this particular trial.
Yeah.
Past the point at which there could be a verdict, right? Yep. They could conceivably get the trial kicked off. They could be mid-trial in like September and October, but not a verdict rendered. And so
aid and abetted that.
Well,
I mean, the Supreme Court aided and abetted that. They could have chosen, they had discretion.
Sure.
And at every point where given discretion, they've chosen the side of delay.
Yeah. You know who else had discretion? The Republican senators who failed to impeach him, and also the Department of Justice. The Department of Justice had to be dragged kicking and screaming to do this by the January 6th committee. And so, like, when you think about the fact that Trump did the coup in 2021, the very beginning, it was January 6th. It's a date that lives in infamy. January 6th, 2021. And now here we are getting to the middle of 2024. Like, to say that the courts are the only ones responsible for the timeline, like, they kind of get the hot potato right here at the end. But, like, there have been a lot of people who have refused at every juncture to be the mechanism for accountability.
I want to defend Merrick Garland slightly on this. I would agree with the Republican senators who deserve blame. Garland's delay, in a world in which people genuinely believe that Trump might not run again, then Garland's delay could be read as prudence. Sure. It could be, this is a bleeding wound in America. Maybe the guy will just go away and we can move on and start rebuilding.
Sure.
Now, I don't know that that's the right answer, but that is not a crazy answer. And it only looks really bad in retrospect now, knowing that he ran. And of course, I mean, I've been saying again that he was going to run from the beginning. But you could see, in a world in which Merrick Garland does move judiciously on this and then Trump goes, then people will be blaming Merrick Garland for Trump running.
They'd
be saying, well, Trump, you know what? You Dems made him do it because he was just going to go away. But Merrick Garland, the out of control prosecutor, went after him, and that made him have to run.
I say this not to impugn Merrick Garland. I say this as a defense slightly of the fact that this people are super mad at the Supreme Court right now. And on one hand, I sort of can understand why. On the other hand, I feel like asking them to make a decision, not just about like, and I wish that they had just ruled, right? They just like upheld the lower court that was like, obviously you don't have blanket immunity. But you can sort of see why, even if you have a bad person as president, right? Donald Trump would say he's president again. Donald Trump, what are the circumstances under which he could prosecute Joe Biden? Right. And so like they're having to consider now this big question that our democracy, this is where Trump tests all our institutions beyond places they've ever had to be tested. And so like, do they now think like, how do we put these guardrails in place? And that is too big a question to decide. Right. Like in days.
I have a darker view.
Sure. And maybe they're just trying to help them delay.
In the same way that like the small government conservatives who are interested in personal responsibility and robust foreign policy, it turns out they didn't care about any of that stuff. Those were all just useful cudgels to beat up on whoever the outgroups were at that point. I think it's possible the textualists and originalists were the same. Because the conservative judicial temperament used to be, got to read the plain text of the Constitution. And we got to rule as narrowly as possible. We cannot legislate from the bench. We got to, in every case, whenever given the opportunity to rule broadly, the conservative judicial philosophy is to rule as narrowly as possible. And this court appears to be choosing to want to rule broadly. This court seems to want to say, as Gorsuch said, what we do now will be considered for the ages. But that is what we used to call a liberal activist view of judicial power. And the conservative view would be, is always like kick the can down the road, right? Hey, we got this question in front of us.
I do think they kick the can down the road, though. I mean, that's just my understanding of what George was saying and David was saying is actually this is a kick down. What they do, they think that the Supreme Court will rule narrowly that Trump can be, is not immune under these circumstances. Like, that's what they think. They think that you will get the right verdict on Trump specifically. They do. And then they think it will get kicked back to these lower courts now to have to wrestle with these broader questions.
Which
and that
is
we will
private,
be considering these
is,
broader. Yeah, we yeah. will be considering these broader questions for like a long time.
But even
time.
That's a middle ground. Like, there was a narrower way to do this. Which is
well, it was
that,
just to not rule on it. It was just to uphold the lower court, right?
And they do seem to. I mean, the very fact that they kept saying, "I don't want to talk about this case. I want to talk about all these hypotheticals." Well, that's the activist impulse. I mean, it says right there in the Constitution. There's that line in the Constitution about how, the president, even having been impeached, the president can still be subject to criminal laws. It said so, and they didn't seem to care at all about that. And so
it
makes
lot
me
of
very
people.
Concerned that conservative justices are now like activist libs wanting to legislate their views of executive power from.
Well, that's it. It's about executive power, right?
So you've seem got a to bunch want of more executive power rather than less.
So this
which, again,
goes
is
back
not
to
conservative.
This, like,
this is
unitary executive theory, but this was like a Dick Cheney back
yeah,
in the day type
thing,
right?
Thing.
That's
but
right.
But it's not really conservative. Conservative is like got to have separation of powers. Each branch has to really be, they should be fighting for their own prerogatives, right? And not deferring. And between Congress, which has basically abdicated its responsibility, and now Congress seems to basically just be like getting a verified blue check mark on Twitter used to be, right? Most of the people who are there because they want to be seen and tweet, and they don't want to make hard decisions. They would like to kick everything to the executive. And now you have a majority in the Supreme Court, which wants the executive to have more power. I don't know. The logic of this does point to king, I think. It points to monarch and sovereign.
This is, I've never liked the unitary executive theory. I've never liked where FedSoc was on this, but to say that it's like, this has been in the conservative ecosystem for a very long time. And like Kavanaugh in particular, again, I'm mostly cribbing off people much smarter than me, but my understanding of sort of his judicial philosophy is to be very protective of executive powers. And so, you know, I think I'm with you on sort of small C conservative. What does that really mean? It is not out of character for several of these conservative Supreme Court justices to be thinking about this from the standpoint of executive power, of which they believe the executive should have more. They want more protections. But the takeaway that I've heard that I think has made me not be like so calm, because I think it's insane that we're having this conversation, and I don't think we spend enough time.
It is insane.
Pointing out how insane it is to be having this conversation, period. And like the extent to which this is testing institutions that did not heretofore need to be tested in this way, because we did not have leaders who were so bereft and so corrupt, so bereft of decency, so corrupt that like you could just see it going any which way. Anyway. I still think we get probably, based on what these guys said, the narrow-ish ruling of Trump can stand trial. He is not immune on these issues. And then, because Coney Barrett, she seems like she's with the three liberal justices, the women, more on the idea of like, my, this doesn't sound right. This doesn't sound like a thing you should be able to do. And you assume that Roberts's attempts to sort of, I don't know, what is split the baby or just like
preserve the institution's integrity.
Yeah. So they rule narrowly. It's a timeline thing now. Like it matters to me that Americans will have to vote for Donald Trump for or against him, without knowing whether or not a jury of his peers would convict him in trying to stage a coup the last time.
It's insane. And there is this, I'm going to push back slightly on this idea that like, you know, Trump doesn't really get what he wants. He kind of gets everything he wants from this. And
except victories.
Let me liken this to arbitration. Let's pretend that you and I are fighting over a candy bar.
Ooh,
and we had previously entered into a contract on, it was a joint owned candy bar. And but our contract said that in the event of a split, a fracture in our relationship, the candy bar had to remain whole, but one party could demand payment for the candy bar, and that if the two parties could not agree, we would submit to binding third-party arbitration. Okay? Perfectly normal setup, just normal LSAT question. You decide you want the candy bar, and I say, fine, I want $1 trillion for the candy bar. You say that's preposterous. And I say, no, I want $1 trillion. You say, well, let's go to arbitration. And we go to arbitration and the court says, the candy bar is only worth $50 million. Well, look, I had to come down $950 billion or something. I'm doing math on this. Point is, you see what I'm saying? Like the ruling is still insane, even though it looks like, see, look, I didn't get anything near like what I wanted. And this is, this is just the Trump MO. This is how he does everything. This is how he does payment of contractors who are building things on their casino, on his casino. And it all makes me very nervous. And it is, I wrote about this months ago. Any institution that does not think of itself as being explicitly there to stop this authoritarian attempt is going to wind up being co-opted by it in some way or another. And I am very concerned that that has already happened to the Supreme Court. It has already been used to help his attempt to avoid prosecution and to return to power. and I see no reason to believe they aren't going to continue to still, maybe not aiding him in all the ways he wants, but aiding him in ways that are helpful. And the answer to this is always, we were never going to get any help. You know, this was always going to be up to the great and good American people, these wise, wise people who we love so much, beautiful people, in many ways the best people. It's going to be up to them. Because ain't nobody coming in to save us, right? No Supreme Court, ain't no 14th Amendment. I mean, I'm sorry, just can we compare the judicious way in which the 14th Amendment case was dealt with by the Supreme Court with this? Right, the 14th Amendment case was right there, and they could have had all sorts of hypothetical questions about what, and so they're like, nope, can't do this. Boom, gone. Ruled as narrowly as possible, got it kicked out. And this, like, well, I mean, we really got to think about it. I don't know, man. Seems like shifting standards. Maybe I'm crazy.
I just think those two cases are completely different. And I guess the question, I think you're taking a slightly over. So here's the thing. I think it's different for different justices. I think Alito and Thomas very much want to help Trump actively, right? And I think they are so, like, MAGA rot brain against the libs. And I mean, the Ginny Thomas stuff, again, on the list of things that are actively preposterous in our politics right now is that the wife of this one of the, like, I'm sorry, he probably should not like recuse himself because she was trying to help. His wife was trying to help the coup succeed. Well, actually, I should point that out. I feel like not enough people are talking about this. Seems relevant.
Oh, so anyway, but you know, there's a wall, an ironclad wall, sure, of separation between, yeah, in, sure, the marriage. That's in the Constitution, I'm pretty sure.
Sure.
The separation of church and state, the separation of the, you know, husband and wife. It's right, yeah, there, Sarah.
But of the six Supreme Court conservatives, right, of appointees, it is actively not the Trump appointees that I like. I don't think Kavanaugh or Amy Coney Barrett or Gorsuch are. Gorsuch, I'm a little less sure about, but like, I don't think they're trying to help Trump as much as. And this is, what is that saying about never attribute to malice? Oh no, that is about stupidity. I'm going to change it. Do not attribute to malice what you could attribute to cowardice, right? Which is that what you have seen from our institutions is an absolute unwillingness to be the institution that grapples definitively with what Donald Trump is doing, right? The reason that it gets kicked back to the people is because that seems like the most, the easiest way for whether it's justices or legislators or whatever to not have to be the ones to make the decision, right? It's the easiest thing to do is to be like, we got to leave it up to the voters, right? And that is the way that these institutions abdicate their responsibility. And so I think there are people that are trying to help, and then I think there's other people who are trying to sort of like dealing in good faith, but also really reticent to like be the ones to do the thing.
You know, we talk about motives, right? And mm-hmm. This is, and I grant it. I, you know, maybe some of these people are acting in good faith by their own lights. But let's pretend they weren't. Okay. Let's pretend these people were actually like on the payroll. You know, Steve Bannon was sending them shirts stuffed full of cash and gold bars. How would they be acting any differently? Right. I mean, that's the thing that becomes difficult, because they are advancing the interests of the guy pursuing the authoritarian attempt, whether they mean to be or not. Right. Same with Mitch McConnell. Same with maybe they don't mean to. Maybe
I think Mitch McConnell's really different. I think Mitch McConnell's different. It's all political with Mitch McConnell. I think it is a real question for them to grapple with around presidential immunity. Like, I don't think that they're don't think it's psychotic that they have to think about how, like, now that this is an issue, now that they've taken it up, that they have to consider it from all the angles and how it will be applied in the future.
Agreed. But that's why I think the obvious answer is to rule as narrowly as possible on this case and leave all of that stuff open.
You don't know that they won't yet.
True. I don't know. I mean, I'm telling you they won't, but I don't.
We'll see.
So the other thing I want to talk about was Columbia University, because there is a story up in the New York Times right now about the fight between the Columbia president and the Columbia Senate. I was not aware that a university has a Senate.
It's like a student government thing.
No. This is made of professors, and the president consults with them and whatnot, and they vote on things. And they, maybe this is normal, but here's what interests me: the Columbia Senate is holding a vote today about whether or not to censure the school's president, and all of this is about basically when the president had gone, you called in the New York PD to clear the first encampment in Columbia. The president had gone to the Senate first to propose this action, and the Senate had said, the Senate voted against it, and then the president went and did it anyway. And so this censure thing is then about is about placing limits on the presidential power of the president. And I just, the juxtaposition of these, like, tweed jacket with patches on their elbows academics in an Ivy, a meaningless Ivy League school, in the stupidest possible, it's not stupid, I understand, I love all of you people who love protesters, I get it, okay, but I'm sorry, this is the smallest possible potatoes, that they are having, like, deep chin tugging, well, crap, we got to reel in the executive. Like, the president can't just do whatever she wants. Meanwhile, the Supreme Court is like, I don't know, maybe he can do a coup. It's insane. It's insane. We are living in crazy town, Sarah. And I just don't understand why nobody, I am the Mugato from Zoolander. I feel like I'm taking crazy pills, and nobody else is looking. Everyone else is just like, yeah, well, you know, lawyers gotta really think through all the angles. I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Once it's there, I don't know what to. I don't know. I don't know. It's like sometimes, man. It's like you don't. The craziest part is that you get to the place at all. Right? Because once you're in the place, you sort of got to run it through your procedures, which feels like what they're doing. It's that it got to this place at all that is the crazy part.
And no, the crazy part is that we're here again with 46% of the country saying, yeah, I'd do that. That's the crazy part, right? Because if I told you this whole story up until now, but the only fact set I changed was the polling numbers, I said, so all these things happened. He was elected in sort of this fluke drawing to an inside straight. And then he had this disastrous presidency, and then he attempted a coup. And then his hold of the Republican Party was so great that he won the nomination again, even though he was facing 4 criminal prosecutions and the Supreme Court. Blah, 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 blah. And he was trailing Joe Biden by 18 points. Everything would make sense to you.
Right. Like
you would say, yeah, okay, that follows from that. That follows from that. That the crazy part is that we're living in a coin flip world where it's like, and maybe he becomes president again. That's the crazy part, because that speaks to, again, just national sickness.
Maybe. Okay. This is going to make you so mad, but I'm going to throw it out here because I think you need to grapple with this.
Okay. Hey again, it's JVL. Well, there's actually even more after this. The conversation goes on from here, and if you want to hear the rest of the show, head on over to Bulwark Plus and subscribe. We'd love to have you.